voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
With the latest update, I'm Carl Hartley. Lebanon's health minister says at least 31 people are now known to have been killed by an Israeli airstrike in Beirut yesterday. Rescue workers are continuing to search through the rubble. The strike killed a top Hezbollah commander and several other senior figures in the group. Our correspondent, Hugo Bechega, is in the Lebanese capital.
This is obviously humiliating for this group. Hezbollah wants to be seen as a powerful, sophisticated enemy by Israel. So this is a major escalation in this conflict. But I think Hezbollah doesn't have many options to give a strong response after these attacks, because it has given repeated indications that it is not interested in a major war with Israel.
Fulham are investigating whether anyone at the club has been affected by inappropriate sexual behaviour from its former owner, Mohamed Al-Fayed. Dozens of women have alleged they were sexually assaulted by him when they were working at Harrods. Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy says she'll be speaking to sporting bodies.
These allegations are historic. My concern is twofold. Firstly, that the victims must have justice. And secondly, that we have to have processes in place to make sure that this can't happen again. These are conversations that I'll have with different sporting bodies.
A Russian missile strike has killed three people in the east of Ukraine. The dead include two elderly women and a 12-year-old boy. Officials say there may be other people still trapped under the rubble. Liverpool is the venue for the Labour Party's first annual conference since taking government. Ahead of the event this weekend, Sir Keir Starmer has announced he'll no longer accept any donations for clothing. It follows criticism of the Prime Minister receiving money for work clothes and glasses from a Labour donor. And it's been confirmed a tornado ripped through Aldershot in Hampshire yesterday, causing damage to buildings and felling trees. More storms and heavy rain are expected today, with a yellow weather warning for Wales, Central and Southern England.
Welcome to the Tooney and Russo show on BBC Sounds. I am here with two of football's most famous friends, Alessia Russo and Ella Toon.
Remember when you scored and you did like five different celebrations?
Yeah, I scored and I did all sorts. Hands went up, hands went out, a jump. So awkward.
Someone's given them to a podcast. Are you joking?
It was like the best 3 years ever. I think I came back a bit Americanized.
Yeah, she did.
She started saying these mad words.
Soccer. They'd like have this like American accent. They've been there a month.
The Tooney and Russo show with me, Vic Hunt. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Afternoon, welcome. This is Saturday's Five Live Sport. There are eight Premier League matches this afternoon. It all kicks off at the London Stadium.
Antonio! What a super finish that is as well!
From the right hand side, Jackson doubles! Chelsea's lead! Super header!
West Ham Chelsea at half 12. Anfield's our base from three. Can Bournemouth do a Forest?
And Hudson-Odoi with a super goal! Right-footed finds the bottom right-hand corner! Stones Anfield!
We'll have our regular Saturday goal service, then sports report, and then at 5.30, Palace-Manchester United.
Garnacho into Rashford, goal number five! Absolutely clinical from Manchester United!
We have to perform on our top level, but we feel ready for the rumble itself.
Then we're off to Wembley as Anthony Joshua challenges for the world heavyweight title.
I feel better now. I feel better, sure. More seasoned, hardened, my punching power's improved. I want to win. Bad, I want to win.
Yes, so we have commentary of Joshua Dubois later on this evening on Five Live. Our coverage will begin at 8:30 here on Five Live with Jonathan Overend and the team. You'll get text coverage and video highlights on the BBC Sport website. If you want the undercard this evening, then that will be on Sports Extra and Sounds from 7 o'clock. And if you want the Josh Warrington, Anthony Kakacha fight, then that will be on the BBC Sport website and app. It is one of the best undercards of any fight, so you will want to be across it. There are all the ways that you can do that. But Joshua Dubois will be here on Five Live later on. It is such a busy Saturday, as well as the boxing, opening weekend of Rugby Union's Gallagher Premiership and the Women's Super League, coming to the end of the regular season in Super League as well. We've got racing from Ayr, qualifying from the Singapore Grand Prix. And then when it comes to the football, as I've already said, 8 Premier League games. Our base is Anfield at 3 o'clock. All the goals as they go in with Ian Dennis and Chris Sutton. Sports report at 5 o'clock. Palace Manchester United from 5:30. At 12:30, 7 games as usual in the EFL, including Sunderland against Middlesbrough in the Championship. We'll go there in a little while. And we've also got a Premier League London derby at 12:30. In the sunshine, West Ham against Chelsea. We'll go there very shortly to get the team news from John Southall. But the one thing I haven't mentioned in all of that is the cricket, because it's late September and we're still playing one day internationals. I would imagine it's a little chilly at Headingley, Ellie.
It's not too bad here today, actually, Chappers. There's some blue sky above as well, and it's actually quite warm. And Matthew Potts has just taken out the off stump of Steve Smith, which, as you can imagine, was greeted by a massive cheer by the fans on the Western Terrace. And also a great celebration when Travis Head departed. He scored a fantastic 150 in that run chase at Trent Bridge a couple of days ago, but he was out for 29. Matthew Short also out for 29. So Potts has taken a couple short. Excellent catch behind by Smith, and Travis Head caught on the boundary by Ollie Stone. So this is really intriguing. You'd have thought that England should have made a better shot of things at Trent Bridge, really bearing in mind the start they had with the bat, and also that Australia were missing such key figures. And you know, we talked about difficulty scores all the time in the Olympics, Mark. The D score has gone up considerably in this second game because Stark, Hazelwood and Maxwell are all returning for Australia. So England actually will, I think, be feeling quite happy with how things are at the moment with Australia. 89 for 3 after 14 overs.
Sports Extra to listen to that as the Australian big names keep coming in that batting lineup. As I said, opening weekend of the Women's Super League season. Chelsea squeaked past Aston Villa last night. Manchester United begin at home to West Ham this lunchtime. They're already underway. Shojo Saka.
Yeah, Manchester United have just had a penalty shout, a really good penalty shout, turned down. New striker Elizabeth Terland tripped in the box. It was an inadvertent trip, but West Ham very lucky not to concede a penalty. Bit of a new look United side this season. Of course, no Mary Earps, no Nikita Paris. Katie Zellum has also left. Mayor Letizia is the new United captain. They'll look to finish better than the fifth position they finished in last year. West Ham second bottom last year. They have already come under a bit of pressure, but currently Manchester United 0, West Ham 0.
Brighton against Everton is a 12:30 kickoff. When the goals go in, we will bring them to you. Let's go to the London Stadium then. West Ham against Chelsea. John Southall.
Good afternoon, Mark. Beautiful day here in East London. Autumnal sunshine. Difficult one to call this. Two new managers, two unpredictable teams. Both have made two changes. West Ham's incoming players, I think, will please the home fans. Lucas Paquetá returns and Crescencio Somerville makes his first league start. Looks a very appealing front four with Somerville and Kudos out wide. Paquetá behind Jarrod Bowen, probably be interchangeable. Suchek and Antonio drop out. The Chelsea changes. Jadon Sancho makes his first league start, as does Tosin Adebayo. So we think Wesley Fofana will start at right back with Tosin and Cole with the centre halves and Cucurella on the left-hand side. So their front four as well. Madueke and Sancho wide, Palmer in behind Jackson. Plenty of attacking talent on the pitch, Mark. Should be entertaining. Always lively, this game.
Mark Albrighton alongside John Southall, former Leicester and Aston Villa winger. Afternoon, Mark. Welcome to Saturdays.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much.
I know you're only recently retired, so are you still at that stage of looking down at that pitch and thinking, what am I doing next to John Southall?
Doesn't need to look at the
pitch.
Well,
no, that's very true.
You tee them up.
No, not at all. It's a pleasure to be here.
And actually, given the positions that you found yourself in when you were a player, there's a lot of attention on both teams, really, when you're looking at that front four, or if you want to say just the three behind the main striker. An awful lot of stories and questions around how they line up, both sides.
Yeah, I think as well, with the game the way it is at the minute, that they could all interchange. Like, I heard Enzo Maresca saying he's got players for certain positions, but he's more than happy to put players in other positions as well, because he feels like they can do a job. It's exciting, and it's exciting for us to try and work out who's going to be playing where.
Rob Green is with us, former England goalkeeper, stat man with us as well. Let's deal with Chelsea first of all then. Are they exciting again?
I think they've... afternoon, everyone. Afternoon. I think they've...
Sorry. Do you want me to do the formal welcome to you as well? Afternoon. Welcome
I'd like to
back
know
to
who the question was aimed at, but yeah. even more disturbingly, you disappeared off the Zoom and all I had was Statman's face on my screen.
Oh, right.
So that was a worrying few moments.
I apologise.
Yeah. No, I think they're slowly sorting themselves out. I think we talked a few weeks ago about Maresca sorting out the dressing room, moving on some of the players and making it literally a manageable squad. And now he's done that, you can see some of the link-up plays, the interchanges, how they're going to play, the options that they've got. That's the exciting thing. You look at the bench as well, and Cuckoo's on there. He scored last week. Mudrick's there. A little bit unreliable, but exciting at times. And the players that they do have, what they do have now is the options. So they're slowly working it out, and I think they're slowly getting this house in order.
And Mark, I was at the press conference yesterday, and he basically laid it out who plays where. So he said, right, on the right-hand side, we have Madueke and Pedro Neto. On the left, we've got Sancho and Mudrick. In the middle, we've got Jackson and Kunku. And in the number 10, we've got Palmer and we've got Felix. So there we go.
Why would you do that, though, Mark? Why would you lay it out in such a black and white way, when, as you've highlighted, and I think a lot of us would agree with you, that all these players can play a variety of roles?
Yeah, I think he probably feels the need to clear it up for people, for even for the players themselves, because the players themselves, that they're aware that they can play in different positions, but ultimately you do want to know what is the position that the manager favours you in. So it's probably to clear it up for them as well, and to stop the questions of who plays where. But I think like I said before, they can all interchange, even on the bench. People like Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, he can play three or four different positions within that sort of attacking side of the team. So it just makes for a sort of interesting read.
Well, Mark, I can tell you what he said about Kieran Dewsbury-Hall. He said he can play in the pocket or wide. So there you go. There are his two positions. They're dealt with.
Right, okay. He's gone from four positions to two positions.
But he is a manager who is very well set in what he wants from each role. I spoke to Willy Caballero, the assistant, last week, and he was saying about Ben Chilwell. He's a brilliant player, lovely guy. He just doesn't fit into our system, how we want to play. So if you can do that to Ben Chilwell, who was playing for England this year, then you can do it to anyone. You can pocket anybody in your side because you're that well set in how you want to play.
How did you find him, Mark? Maresca.
Yeah, so I think, like you said there, he's a manager that's very keen on structure, and that explains sort of his comments in his press conference. He's very keen on people staying in their positions, and when they're, I don't know, when you're attacking, just making sure you hold, even if you're not involved in the play, just being there to create space, to create options. But he's got his way of playing. I think you look at the Ben Chilwell situation, and he will see it as though, right, he can't do exactly what I want him to do in terms of being that inverted fullback. He don't fit the mould. We had a player, we had James Justin, who at Leicester, who was one of the at the time he got into the England squad and one of the best sort of attacking fullbacks in the country. He'd had an unbelievable season the season before, like I said, got in the England fold. But Maresca came in and didn't see him playing in that position that he wanted to play, where Ricardo Pereira fit it perfectly. So it meant that James Justin didn't really get a look in that season. I think that's a very similar situation to what's happened with Ben Chilwell.
When you're in that situation as a teammate, are you as a group thinking... that sounded like a teenager. Are you thinking that's not really very fair, or do you just kind of have to accept that that's what happens when you have a change of manager?
I think it's hard, especially when you're young. It's hard to accept, but I think as you get a little bit older, you appreciate honesty in football. So, as tough as it might be to take, all you ask of a manager is to be honest with you, whether that's fair or not, whether you think that his decision is fair or not, then that's so be it. But you have to have honesty from a manager, and if there's one thing that Maresca's come in and done is being honest with his players, and he's laid it out to them in straightforward terms.
When you have a manager like that, a coach in such a way, as an outfield player, do you find it boring to be that much in a structure? Do you find it like a bit too rigid? It takes away your creative flair, or do you think, no, I can thrive in this?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I did find it boring at times last season in training sessions. You'd do sort of a little rondo to start with, warm-up rondo, and then you'd go into your tactical play. And as a winger in this system, I was stood out there sometimes, and I probably only get three touches for the rest of the session, which was probably another 45 minutes long. So it was... That was frustrating, and
which is a problem because Chelsea have got about 50 wingers.
Yes, yeah, they'll be queuing up behind each other. So it is difficult in that sense. Like I say, I didn't really take to it too much. But managers
what
different.
What are you? So if you're only getting three touches, what are you doing?
So you stood on the side, basically.
Watching and listening.
Yeah, so if he sets you up in, he'll basically put two teams. So, but you'll be sort of rotating it. So you'll have if you're working on your attacking patterns of play, you'd have your 11 set up and then another 11. So you take it in turns, basically. So it was me and Abdul Fattah. We were on the right hand side, and when I'm working, he's resting. When he's working, I'm resting. But the way that we played, the ball was going through the middle quite a lot. The patterns of play were all going through the middle, so the wingers were sort of just there to open the game up and open the space up.
Oh, you do all that standing around, you might as well have been a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I got very close to the kit man on the side of the pitch chatting to him.
One season at Chelsea with Maurizio Sarri, that finished me off, so yeah.
Did you touch the ball at all during that season?
I was very busy. I never touched it once.
Statman, when you just let's look at the Chelsea wide players then, and their sort of their contributions. You could even do it in the number of starts really that they all make, because I want to get into that. It's all very well having lots of options, but if you are one of those options, the inconsistencies of whether you're playing or not must be frustrating.
I think that's definitely a problem, but I think we've seen kind of with the starts that there is favouritism in certain positions and areas, but the wide area, as you mentioned, Mark, is where we're seeing a lot of rotation between Madueke, we're seeing Pedro Neto there. The interesting one is Jadon Sancho, because he's a player that, obviously, watching him at Manchester United, was nowhere near the level at Borussia Dortmund. Just going back to look at the numbers at Borussia Dortmund, they were on par with your kind of Haalands and your Mbappes. At 19 years old, he was averaging 1.3 goals and assists per game. That is ridiculous. That season, he was directly involved in 33 goals. The talent is there. It's all about the attitude. And I think his cameo against Bournemouth was quite good. And I think with him, you need players around. And we saw Cucurella hitting that inside channel around him, overlapping quite a lot. So it might be kind of a good mix for Jadon Sancho, and he might become the number one on the left-hand side.
When you look at all of these options, Mark, and I'll bring Robin on this as well, but first of all to you. Right, so it could be Neto or Madueke. It could be Mudryk or Sancho. But... You're never sure, really, whether you're playing from one game to the next, are you? And even actually, at Bournemouth last weekend, they played 45 minutes and then getting hooked at half time. To get any kind of rhythm going must be really. I have a huge amount of sympathy for the wide players, because to get any kind of rhythm going must be very difficult.
Yeah, I think. I look at sort of Sancho and Neto, and these players, that they know that when they come to this football club, though. They've seen it over the last sort of year or two, that's how it works. There's so many players here, there's so much competition for places. I do feel sorry for the striker, though, in a certain way, because all these players are different. Sancho's different to Neto, so Jackson's in the middle, and if Sancho's got the ball, he might take more touches, and the ball might it might be more delayed in coming into the box, whereas Neto would probably be a little bit more direct, and So he's having to form relationships with all these different players, and I'm sure he finds that hard.
And also, Rob, if you start but think, oh, looking at that bench, if I don't do well in 45 minutes, I'm going to be off. No, but that...
Yeah,
that also,
you're doing well to last that long.
But that also changes a mindset, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you play under pressure. And there is that balance. And, you know, to play under pressure, to have looking over your shoulder is never a nice feeling, whether you're a creative player or a player on the bench. And, you know, Statman just came up with it. You're looking at someone who's, you know, on fire, creating, what was it, one point something, maybe just about a goal a game, or directly involved. You've got half of that. You haven't even got that as a player. So, you know, good luck. So it's something that you've got to hit the ground running. And if you don't, I really struggle to see how the continuity is built, especially when Mark touches on it. You get three touches in training. You know, that's, again, is something that you wonder how it's going to go over the season. You see that someone like Cole Palmer isn't in the Conference League squad, so there may be openings and timings and times available for players there. But on the whole, the pressure is so great to get it right from the first minute. It's going to be tough.
Dave?
I think one of the interesting ones as well, looking at that striker situation, you've got Christopher Nkunku, that is a player that has played his best football either playing with a big target man or playing with a quick forward with him. Playing as a two, either kind of at Leipzig, it was either 3-4-1-2 or it was a 4-4-2. We're not really going to see that under Maresca. So are you ever going to get the best out of Christopher Nkunku? Yes, he is unbelievable in the penalty area. He'll finish anything off. But is he that guy that can sit by himself, play back to goal, play the harder part of the game that a centre-forward has to do in the Premier League?
But
there's question marks there as well.
But that's not Nkunku's fault, or indeed Maresca's fault.
No, not
is
at
it?
All.
Bearing in mind he was bought by the Chelsea sporting directors for, I couldn't even begin to tell you which head coach he was bought for, two head coaches ago maybe. But that's part of the dilemma here.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of like looking at that situation, and as we mentioned, a load of these players that have come in and come out, do they blend together? And I think that's what Maresca's probably searching for today, with looking at Madueke, looking at Palmer and Jadon Sancho. Is that three behind the centre-forward going to work? And then you're looking at, is the centre-forward going to work? And then you're going to go and look at whether the rest of the team works. There's a lot of questions for Maresca, and I think he's got a pretty tough job at the moment.
Where could they finish, Rob, do you think? Because actually, in all of this discussion about, you know, how do they use players and whether there's a muddle and, you know, inconsistencies, you know, they've got 7 points off from their first four games. They're tucked in eighth. Where is fourth a possibility, a viability?
At the minute, I don't think so. I think they're, you know, it's a very small sample, isn't it, this season?
It is,
but
yes.
they rode their luck last week against Bournemouth. Whether they should have got anything from the game is difficult. They were under the pump for a long period. So, but then again, you say, well, that's a different side to Chelsea that we haven't seen over recent seasons. They'd have rolled over and been beat last season, maybe. So it's something that I think is a stretch. I think this is a long-term project, and you know, they're slowly sorting it out as a management system. And what I would say is there's not many American owners who don't make it work in one way, shape or form within football. I know Manchester United is a hot topic all the time.
I mean, I was just going to...
They make it work for them. You wonder about how they make it work, but they definitely make it work for them. So if they don't finish in the top four, they give it another go. So there's something in it. I think off the pitch as well, behind the scenes, there's been so much turmoil, so much change. That now has all been sorted as well. This season might be a stretch. I think next season possibly will be a much better one.
Mark Albrighton and John Southall then are at West Ham Chelsea for us. Rob Green and Statman Dave are with us as well. 8 Premier League games in total this Saturday at 3:00. Fulham, Newcastle, Villa, Wolves, Leicester, Everton. How big a game is that for those two? Tottenham, Brentford, and another huge game towards the bottom as well at St Mary's, Southampton, Ipswich. Our base will be Anfield for Liverpool against Bournemouth. Then we've got full commentary from 5:30 of Crystal Palace, Manchester United. Before we then go to Wembley to keep the live sport coming, full commentary tonight here on 5 Live of Joshua Dubois. Our coverage will begin about 8:30. The undercard will be on Sports Extra from 7 o'clock on Sports Extra right now. The one-day international between England and Australia at Headingley. Any more wickets for England, Ellie?
Not since we last spoke, Mark. Australia 104 for 3 in the 19th over. And England restricting them to just slightly over 5.5 and over. So this is because they lost wickets relatively early on. Matthew Short was out for 29. Travis Head was out for 29. Mitch Marsh has just passed 30, so he's the top scorer so far. But very satisfying for Matthew Potts to see the off stump of Steve Smith wheeling away for just 4 runs. So as you say, a lot of big hitters in this Australian team. Marnus Labuschagne hit an excellent 77 in support of Travis Head the other day at Trent Bridge. He's on 8, but Australia 104 for 3 in the 19th over.
And Glenn Maxwell still to come.
Yes, and we know what he can do, particularly with the bat when he gets stuck in, and Stark and Hazelwood in the bowling attack as well. But I think, you know, Harry Brook trying to take a positive approach, switching things up from last time round, saying, you know, he won the toss and batted at Trent Bridge, won the toss and bowling this time. And, you know, and actually just worth noting as well that Jofra Archer is sitting this one out because England, I think, maybe alternating, they'll rotate his workload in this 50-over series because still making his way back 18 months since he'd played an ODI before he played at Trent Bridge the other day. And actually that's the length of time it has been before since Ollie Stone last played an ODI, but he's playing here at Headingley. And the sun peeking out from behind the clouds, Mark, as Adil Rashid bowls from the rugby stand end. So feels like seasons are crossing over quite nicely here.
Sports Extra to listen to the cricket. Teams just coming into the tunnel at the London Stadium. We'll talk West Ham in a little while. Let's focus on the EFL games that kick off at 12:30. Seven of them in total. We'll start with Sunderland, whose 100% record came to an end last weekend when they were beaten at Plymouth. They'll go to the top at least until 5 o'clock today if they can beat Middlesbrough at the Stadium of Light. Katie Smith.
Yeah, afternoon more murky than light here today, but obviously we're expecting a brilliant atmosphere. But it is going to be a first experience of this for the new Sunderland boss, Régis Labrie, and he was asked actually this week if he views this as a real local derby. He said, the most important derby from my knowledge is Newcastle, but he says taking on Borough today will be interesting. That loss to Plymouth put an end to 4 wins on the bounce, but 3 points today would mean it's the first time since 2012 that Sunderland have won 3 home fixtures in a row in the top 2 divisions. One change today, Chris Meppen making his debut on loan from Bournemouth in for Ballard at the back. Borough, good start as well to this campaign, just the 1 loss in their opening 5 games. They also recorded their biggest ever win over Sunderland here at the Stadium of Light on their last visit. That was in October, 4-0. One change too for them. Still no start for Ben Doak. Aidan Morris in for Dan Barlasser.
Next, let's go to Carrow Road. Norwich haven't lost here since last November. Watford are their visitors who go to Manchester City in the League Cup during the week. Nathan Alban.
Good afternoon, Mark. Norwich still, though, looking for their first home win in the league this season. And this week, they've had their back room raided by Stoke. Narcisse Pelak taking the top job there, and goalkeeper coach Paul Clements also leaving Carrow Road. Watford will be licking their lips. They've won on 4 of their last 5 visits here. But despite no wins in 2, they have started this season much the stronger. Tom Cleverley says it'll be hard to keep a lid on his team. Norwich's strong home record could be under threat.
Not that Stoke got off to a very good start under their new manager last night. They were beaten 3-1 at home by Hull, and that was Hull's first win of the season. One other early game in the Championship, that's at Loftus Road, QPR against Millwall. Then we've got 2 early games in League 1 and League 2. If Lincoln get a big win against Wigan at lunchtime, they could go to the top of the table before the 3 o'clock. There's also Exeter against Stevenage. In League 2, Accrington Stanley have had a difficult start to the season. They're next to bottom. They've got 2 points from their first 6 games. They're at home to Port Vale. The other early game in League 2 is Chesterfield against Cheltenham. The big game in League 2 is at Meadow Lane later. The top 2 meet Notts County and Gillingham, and we have a reporter there, and of course all the goals as they go in throughout the course of the afternoon from Anfield this afternoon with Ian Dennis and Chris Sutton. I'm delighted to say that along with Rob Green and Statman Dave, Aston Villa and Scotland captain Rachel Corsi is in the studio with us. Afternoon, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Nice summer?
Busy summer, yes.
Yes.
straight back into action as well. So
straight
we're
back
up and running.
Into it, we are, absolutely. Former Forest and Tottenham midfielder Andy Reid with us as well. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. How
you
are
here
we all?
Very early. Do you know what? It's like when you get dumped and the person who wants to get back with you and they just make extra effort. And that's, I kind of sense that's what you're doing. You know, you walked out on us, but now you're making extra effort.
Oh, well, I am, yeah. I have to make up for me misgivings before, haven't I? So, it's all right. I don't mind putting in the graft, mate, but you'll have to do a bit of graft yourself.
now I've got my second chance with you. I've got to work hard to keep you, have I?
Yeah, you have to, yeah.
Wow. God, thanks God there's been an early goal at Manchester United in the Women's Super League to get us out of this. Shoujo Saka.
Yeah, Manchester United 1, West Ham 0. 27 minutes on the clock, and it's Jay-Z. It was a hopeful long ball. Jay-Z then picked the pocket of the West Ham defender, Camilla Sayers, and finished low, left-footed, into the net. Manchester United 1, West Ham 0.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the London Stadium. They're about to get underway, John Southall.
We are. Chelsea just in a huddle inside their own half at the moment. The bubbles just wafting away in the East London afternoon air. And it's an intriguing game, this one. West Ham, remember, their first two home games of the season. They've lost them both, albeit against Aston Villa and Manchester City. They'll be kicking us off this afternoon. Mark Albrighton will be with us throughout the afternoon. What are we expecting?
Yeah, I think we're expecting an exciting game, sorry. I think with the attacking talent on show for both sides, it's going to be a good fixture to be able to watch. And obviously, West Ham, like you say, lost their first two games at home, so they'll be looking to kickstart their season.
Yep, good atmosphere inside the London Stadium. We are underway. They've got a good recent record here against Chelsea, West Ham. It's West Ham 0, Chelsea 0. Here we go.
Yeah, and we'll talk West Ham in just a moment, but with Rachel Aaron on the opening weekend of the Women's Super League season, and Villa played Chelsea last night, the champions, and Chelsea squeaked home. How do they look under new managership?
Yeah, I think we'd obviously prepped quite a bit because obviously it was our first game. You have that bit extra time and it's the first game of the season because obviously you've spent the last 3 months just waiting for last night to come around. I mean, you know, I think they've made a lot of changes too. The manager, Sonia Bonpastor, she comes in, great player, played against her, but also a lot of accolades now as a manager as well, a young manager, so they're a good team. You know, she doesn't need to change too much, I think, to make them much better. So it's tricky for us. I think we felt we competed. But sometimes that's... I remember that last season. You know, we had a good start, tough start against Man United. Competed really well, narrowly lost. And it can be tough because it's results-based.
When you spend 3 months prepping for the opening game of the season, but you're prepping, albeit you're prepping for the champions who've made changes under a new manager. So are you watching a lot of tapes of her previous team to get an idea, or are you kind of trying to second guess what she might do?
Well, naturally, we obviously have new managers as well, so we've spent most of this pre-season largely focused on yourselves, you know, your own system. You want to know what your starting point is, where your framework, where you're going to adjust from. So most of the time is spent on yourselves. I don't think you look too much about, you know, too far what she's done elsewhere, but naturally you can get a feel for the style of play that she's going to ask her players to play within. Most of the specific prep then comes just in the last week. You know, you're getting the finer details about specific individuals, but that's the other thing with Chelsea. They, you would argue, have the most depth out of anybody in the WSL. So, you know, there's quite a lot of prep there because of so many options up in that final third, and a lot of quality. I think we did really well to minimise that yesterday.
It leads me on to another question about preparation, but when we come back to the men in just a moment. But there's already been an early goal in the Championship. We were talking about Norwich's home form, Nathan, and
they've made a very strong start, less than 3 minutes on the clock, and they have the opening goal. Callum Doyle must have been 25 yards out, lined it up on his left foot outside the box and rifled it into the top corner. Norwich 1, Watford 0.
Just on preparation, Andy Reid, and with your sort of coaching head on as well, we were talking the other night about players and the number of games, and how a lot of the time we've looked at it from a physical capability and physical tiredness, and we actually switched it to then also the mental capabilities and the mental tiredness. And Maresca has talked about having to prepare his Chelsea side for four different competitions in the space of five games and 14 days. Oh, and let's go to the London Stadium. John?
Chelsea have the early lead. It is Chelsea 1, West Ham 0. It came down the left-hand side and Nicholas Jackson had acres of space and he put it through, may have gone through the goalkeeper's legs into the bottom right-hand corner. What a start for Chelsea.
Yeah, Jadon Sancho, he's got off to a great start there. He's had some good early touches and then a little 1-2 and finds Jackson sort of threatening the back line and Jackson, calm as you like, the finish, the run for it, brilliant, absolutely superb.
Celebrating in front of the West Ham fans, that's probably not very advisable, but he'll make his way back to the halfway line. Talking beforehand then, if you're playing Kunku or you play Nicholas Jackson, well there you go, he's responded with a goal in the first few minutes, West Ham 0, Chelsea 1.
Although the West Ham fans would have to have the arm strength of Steve Backley if they were going to throw anything at him.
If they were sitting where we are, that's for sure.
I mean, he's just run 25, 30 yards there, Mark, unchallenged, hasn't he?
He has, yeah, and I think probably 20 seconds before that, Chelsea lost the ball in the middle of the park and Kudos had a chance very, very similar on the right-hand side where Cucurella was probably caught out of position a little bit. So and the keeper saved that one and then they go at the other end, ball to Sancho, and like I say, he's found the pass and it's a great finish.
I particularly enjoy Statman Dave's face whenever Jadon Sancho does anything positive in somebody else's shirt at the moment.
Yeah, it breaks my heart. It's like Paul Pogba is the same thing. Watch Paul Pogba at Juventus, what a footballer. Watch Jadon Sancho at Borussia Dortmund, what a footballer. Comes to Manchester United, both those players, don't see much, and now at Chelsea, it's absolutely flying.
So as I was going to say, Andy, Maresca was talking about, you know, preparing his team for five games in 14 days across four different competitions. And the different mental requirements there, when we're looking at teams and plans and set pieces and everything that you coaches put on the players to be aware of, trying to remember who you're playing and what your instructions are for certain teams is actually quite tiring, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's so much preparation that goes into it and there's so much information that you have to give to the players. Now, I think it's a real art how much information you give at the right time. If you give players too much information, they can get a little bit swamped by it and sometimes it doesn't quite go how you want. So I think there's a real key to giving them the really key information, the really important bits that you feel are going to be important. But if you give them too much, and especially if you've got a long period of a big lot of games in a short period, then it becomes a real, real struggle then for the players. And they, you know, it's a difficult one, I think, sometimes to get the balance. And the real good managers, I think, hit the sweet spot more often than not.
Would you pare it back if you had such a busy period?
Yeah, absolutely. If you think about the amount of time that you spend in a meeting room where you're going through video clips, where you're going through the opposition, players have a limited amount of space in their brain to be able to take on board so much information. So for me, over a long period of time, I think you need to get your principles in play so you know that when you go into the game, these are the things that we do regardless of who we're playing against. So them things are the non-negotiables. And then after that, then it's the little bits of what the opposition might do and the little bits around the edge.
Rob Green, why are you smiling at players only have a certain amount of space to...
I was looking at your eyes light up.
No, they did not at all.
No, I completely concur. And it's something that it's an emotional side as well, that you're looking at games that are going by and they become a blur. The meetings become a blur. It's so hard. When I was at Chelsea and we were in the Europa League, obviously went the distance with that, went the distance with the League Cup and obviously had the Premier League games. The games just become so thick and fast that you're in two meetings a day before the games, two meetings a day after the games, and that information just becomes too much. You played a game at Crystal Palace and you walk off the pitch and you just go, right, what's the next game? You just roll from one game to the next. There's no celebration. There's no up or down. It's an emotional, absolute flatline over the course of a season because it's so hard.
West Ham have had a good chance to equalise, John Southall.
They have. They still trail by Chelsea by 1-0. Kudos with a cross from the right-hand side. Somerville just stretching for the header just over the top of him and out for a goal kick for Chelsea. And as Mark said, they had a chance just before the goal as well. Kudos cut in from the right-hand side, very similar to Nicholas Jackson, but his shot saved by Robert Sanchez. West Ham 0, Chelsea 1.
It's been a good start, Mark, hasn't it?
It has, and I think we said about it before, there's so much attacking talent on show that it was always going to be an exciting game. So it's been a great start, and by both teams, really. Obviously, Chelsea have got the goal, but West Ham have created some chances themselves.
Although watching this at the moment, Rachel Corsi, Chelsea look like they have an awful lot of time on the ball, don't they? If they get it through that first press into their midfield, they look like they've got a lot of time on the ball.
Yeah, they do. Even just the goal, you know, they're smart in those little moments when they play quick to release and find those little pockets of space. They're also a team that are very dynamic, so that in terms of looking like they've got a lot of space, a lot of that time is just because players are so sharp.
If we move on to West Ham, because we haven't talked about West Ham yet this afternoon, there was an article in The Eye that we mentioned about on Monday Night Club that they are a rally car being driven by a pensioner at the moment. Is that harsh, Rob Green?
Thanks. No, I think they've not got it right. I think they Rachel touched on it there. First and foremost, it's the space that Chelsea have is, over the course of the games that they played, the goals they concede are so easy. It's less than three passes. You go forward, you go back, the press is beaten, you're through. I don't think the understanding's there. You look at that goal today, Kilman doesn't know how slow Mavropanos is. He stood tracking back, going, well, I'm in line with him, catch him up. And he never catches him up. He just didn't know. And by the look of his face when the goal went in, he's like, where were you? Well, you were never going to catch him up. So it's something that they haven't got right yet. And there's been a lot of players coming. We talked about Chelsea. West Ham have had a wholesale change. And I just don't think, you know what, it's going to take time. Again, it's not there yet.
I do, just on that, Rob, I think there's just an element of they've actually gone with quite a settled back four. I think Wan-Bissaka was obviously a late addition. I do think they will find that solidity. I think there's an element of a little bit of harshness. You look at the games they've lost a little, you know, they lost to Villa, they lost at City. I don't know that teams necessarily are going to go at the end of the season. That's where West Ham have let themselves down. But they do need to get better quickly. They can't be conceding these chances that they do concede. But I think they've got the players to be very solid in that capacity.
Do you think that Ed Francis has just scored for Exeter in League One, by the way? That's his third of the season. They lead Stevenage by a goal to... Are they partly victims of the fixture list?
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
Caught watching. To a degree, I think maybe we're partly a little red, like too hasty to want to judge. I think within four games, you know, to take 4 points, today's not looking overly promising so far, but they're still in the game. I think we need a little more time before we can be, you know, really cynical about how it's going to look.
Andy?
Yeah, I think they need a little bit of time. I think Lopetegui needs a bit of time. I'm not massive fan about how he comes across sometimes, but I think he's a fantastic coach. I think he's a really top coach. I think he's proved that everywhere he's been, that he knows how to organise a team. I think there is an element of new players come into it. I think you give them time, and I think you will find that they will be okay. Probably my caveat to that is that, although by the end a lot of the fans wanted to get David Moyes kind of moved on, there was a lot of success in the period that he was in there. So he's coming up against that expectation as well. He has to kind of go a little bit better than that, or probably a lot better than that in the eyes of some of the West Ham fans.
The corresponding fixtures, just going back to something you touched on, Chappers, corresponding fixtures last season, the opening four games, they conceded 14 goals in these games.
Right. So they're doing better.
So they're flying, relatively.
No, but, well, and that's the, with all due respect, Dave, that is the slight problem, in that you can manipulate them however you want. And Rob's point is valid, but equally, you could go, they've won only two of their 12 Premier League home fixtures this calendar year.
Yeah, which is really an important statistic. And
even
fact,
though it's under two managers.
I think one of the big things, though, with this West Ham team this season, obviously, we have to take it is four games, but there hasn't really been a change in terms of, I'm not really seeing anything with a stylistic perspective, from a stats perspective. You look at their average possession is 43%. That's the second worst in the Premier League. Like, David Moyes was very good at not having the ball. This West Ham team doesn't look like it's not good at not having the ball. And I think you compile that with they've conceded the most shots on their goal. Then you look at a statistic that I quite like called challenge intensity, which looks at the duels, tackles, and interceptions.
Oh, well, where's the? This is new. This is new.
Mark, we've done this one before.
Have we?
We've definitely done this one before.
I don't actually know this one. I'm fascinated.
You don't know what you do.
No, I don't know what this means at all.
So you don't know. Andy, do you know?
Yeah, I've got a bit of an idea, little bit, yeah. Yeah, I don't want to really agree with him because I quite liked where this was going. Get on Dave moment, wasn't it? I was quite enjoying that.
Right, go on then. Talk me through challenge intensity.
So challenge intensity is a number of duels, tackles and interceptions per minute of the opposition's possession. So how frequently you're trying to win the ball back when the opponents have got the ball. Attempting to. So, you know, going in a duel, winning a tackle, making an interception. Only Everton and Brentford have got a lower challenge intensity in the Premier League this season. We've got to caveat Brentford because Brentford are really interesting in terms of how they're pressing and how they are squeezing. But I think from West Ham's perspective, they stand off a lot. And they drop off a lot. And that is something that I look at and think that is not going to flow well if they continue to do that. And as Andy mentioned, Lopetegui's got to do the work on the training ground to make their press better.
Where they're going to have a problem with that is the fact that they're playing such a high line at the moment. If you look at that goal that they just conceded, if you don't get pressure on the ball and you've got a high line, you get players who are prepared to run in behind, then it becomes a really, real struggle.
But, right, hang on a minute. If you try and win the ball back, does that count as challenge intensity? Dave?
Well, if you're going in to make a duel or a tackle, so that would be trying to win the ball back, yes.
Right, even if you actually don't win it back.
Yeah, it's all about intensity. That's why it's quite interesting.
Well, no, that's why it's called challenge intensity. I get that bit. Right.
So it's an important metric. As Andy mentioned, if you play a high line, you have to have a high challenge intensity or you're likely to be played over, or you've got to block all the passes into, you know, in between the space in between the lines, like let's say Villa do. They block really well on a 4-4-2 and sometimes they don't pressurise the ball as much as they should do, but at the same time they play that high line, they do really well. I think West Ham are stuck in between both of those two methods.
But then if you, Rachel's just looked at me shaking her head and gone back to watching the game, but if you are a side that is set up to work on shape and to invite a team onto you and then hit on the counter, your challenge intensity will be lower. But that doesn't mean that you're not following the instructions that you're meant to be following.
Yeah, I think the biggest danger of this is when we speak about it, a lot of fans, how we watch the game is we like to see players make tackles. Mm. We like that. So then you start talking about challenge intensity, you get loads of people going to be like, yeah, our challenge intensity is rubbish. But there are loads of reasons why you might be trying to, you know, intentionally not get into those duels in certain areas of pitch. You're trying to limit the areas that other players you feel carry the greatest threat can't receive the ball. So then you might not fly into tackles. I think I'm a little bit like, this stat for me isn't overly valuable in what it tells you, just in its own merit.
I mean, you're slightly wrong when you talk about the biggest danger when we're talking about it. The biggest danger when we're talking about this is that people go and listen to Pick of the Pops with Mark Goodyear on Radio 2. That's the biggest problem. Rob?
So what you're saying is if you hold a mid block, you need a challenge intensity of X amount. If you hold a low block, you can have a challenge intensity of that X amount and it needs to be or could be lower.
Again, it all comes down to how you want to play and your opinions on football. My opinions on football is you have to have a high challenge intensity if you want to play high. If we look at the Premier League last season, the top five teams are Liverpool, Tottenham, Spurs, Bournemouth and Brighton. All teams that squeeze high, that play with a high line, that win the ball back and dominate football. That's, as a fan, as someone, as an analyst that likes that type of football, that's what I feel needs to work together for, you know, in terms of making that strategy work in the long term.
John Southall.
It's 2-0, West Ham 0, Chelsea 2. It's Nicholas Jackson again. West Ham just let them play through them. Jackson threw on goal, clinically finished it.
Yeah, like you say, clinically, he's made a really good start to the game, Jackson. He's been a threat. He's come short. He's gone in behind. He's two goals. He's made runs in behind, and he's finishing. He looks so confident in front of goal at the minute. And like you say, they're playing through far too easy. And they're just getting time on the ball, just picking the passes until that spare man comes, and ultimately it leads to a goal.
Well, people have questioned Nicholas Jackson's finishing. It's two in the opening. What have we played? 18 minutes of the game. West Ham 0, Chelsea 2.
It's very easy for them, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, I just looked at the pass there, just in the middle of the park to Casado, and it's far too easy for him to get the ball in that area, and it's just one pass then through straight through the middle of the centre halves, and like I say, Jackson's playing on that shoulder, and like he looks so assured going through, but. Yeah, it's far, far too easy from a West Ham point of view.
The challenge intensity was very low.
That's what I was about to say, Mark. The challenge intensity was very low. High line through ball goal.
Are you having challenge intensity, Mark?
Definitely not.
No, right. you've got the gist of a Saturday very early on. Well done. Goal in the Women's Super League. Show, Joe.
Yeah, it's in added time. Manchester United 2, West Ham 0. Leah Galton picking it up on the left, skipping inside and unleashing a shot from the edge of the box. It was a sweet finish. Manchester United 2, West Ham 0.
Wicked at the cricket. Ellie.
Yes, Marnus Labuschagne is out, caught by Liam Livingstone off the ball again. Jacob Bethel, the young spinner, he was out for 19. Useful partnership of 66 with him and Mitchell Marsh. Marsh is still there on 59. The Aussie captain off 53 balls brought up his 50 with a 6. And joining him at the crease is Alex Carey. Few Yorkshire boos for Alex Carey, remembering what happened involving him and Johnny Bairstow during the Ashes last year at Lords.
It's always good to hold a grudge, isn't it?
Oh, I know. Listen, no one holds a grudge like a Yorkshireman. coming from a long family of Yorkshiremen.
You're going to keep digging there, Ellie, just to get yourself out of that one. It is half-time in the WSL and Manchester United lead by 2-0 against West Ham. Into the Championship, goalless between QPR and Millwall at Loftus Road. Also goalless at the Stadium of Light, Katie Smith.
Yeah, pretty decent opening 21 minutes. There's kind of a franticness, though, to how Sunderland are playing, coming back from that loss last week at Plymouth. Patient and composed from Middlesbrough. They've had the best chance so far. A lofted ball in from the right, met by the head of Tommy Conway, who 8 yards out tips it onto the post. 0-0.
Let's go to Carrow Road. Nathan Alban watching Norwich Watford.
20 gone here, Mark. Norwich 1, Watford 0 still, and problems mounting for the visitors. They've made 2 injury enforced substitutions. First in defence with Porteous on for Sierra Alta, and then goalkeeper Dan Backman hasn't looked right since the goal. Question marks over his goalkeeping. He put a hand to the ball, but it wasn't strong enough. He's been replaced by Jonathan Bond. Norwich 1, Watford 0.
I am going to draw a line under the challenge intensity now, but if it just give me no I am but just to sort of round it all up, what is it measured in, Dave? Is it a percentage? What is it?
It's a number, so it works out as a number. As West Ham this season are looking at around 4.3 duels, tackles and interceptions per minute of opposition pressure, and right. I genuinely think if you watch that goal back, the challenge intensity, well, the intensity of West Ham is a massive issue.
Colin Morris just sent me a WhatsApp. I'm physically angry at the challenge intensity statistic. I'm going to pull over at the next service station and beat my car with the branch of a tree, Basil Fawlty style. So West Ham are 2-0 down against Chelsea at the London Stadium. Their women are also 2-0 down to Manchester United in the Women's Super League. The other game in the Women's Super League was a 12:30 kickoff, and that is goalless between Brighton and Everton. We've given you the Championship latest scores in League One. Exeter lead Stevenage by a goal to nil. Goalless between Lincoln and Wigan. And in the two early games in League Two, Accrington Stanley, who are struggling at the moment, goalless with Port Vale. It's also Chesterfield 0, Cheltenham 0. Let's go to the BMW PGA Championship. Third round of this, Ian Carter. And Rory McIlroy right in the mix here after a sensational eagle three at the par four fifth after a gorgeous approach shot in there. He's just birdied the seventh at 12 under par. He's alongside another former champion here, Matteo Manassero, and just one shot off the lead. But it's Matt Baldwin who's still out in front. He has had two birdies and two bogeys so far, 13 under par. He's got a chance of a birdie at the seventh to come, but leads by one. Couple of other Englishmen showing up nicely, and Eddie Pepperell at 10 under, three shots off the lead. Aaron Rye within four of the lead, as is Harry Hall and the Scot Bob McIntyre.
Just as we watch Jarrod Bowen fire wide for West Ham, who are 2-0 down at home to Chelsea, for all we've put, Rachel Corsi, the sort of caveats in, you know, difficult start at home and Villa and City and now Chelsea and so on and so forth, it's very early days. He does feel, rightly or wrongly, like he will be one of the first under pressure if a bad start continues, doesn't he?
Potentially, could be. I think a large part of that, a little bit, is derived by the expectation of their fans, though. Because as we've already touched on, David Moyes did what can only be described as, I would say, a very good job. You know, European trophy was a remarkable season, you would have to say. And even still, you know, the fans were unhappy. And that does drive a lot, I think, of the narrative.
Rob wants to come in, but we've had a goal at the Stadium of Light. Katie.
And it's gone to the home side. Sunderland 1, Middlesbrough 0. The goal for Chris Rigg. There was a wiggling move down the right-hand side. The ball came in. It was sort of dealt with. Then it hit the byline. And Rigg was over it. And instead of turning and twisting his body, back heels it across and into the goal. Sunderland 1, Middlesbrough 0.
That's a great finish, isn't it? What a finish that is.
That's cheeky, yeah.
Such a tight angle as well. Oh. And you'd say Borough were on top at that point as well. Kind of came from nowhere. A bit of a kind of fluky move and a fluky finish.
Well, I think...
maybe that's harsh. No, sorry, I shouldn't have said that. What? A skillful finish.
Yeah, that's a very good finish. Sunderland lead by a goal to nil. Rob, you were going to come in.
It's one of two things. They're not particularly great sort of affirmations of the manager in that you're saying they either don't know what they're doing or they can't do what they're being asked to do right now. And if one of the two isn't great, you hope it's the latter, because if they don't know what they're doing, then you say, wonder what's the manager been doing. But they just are not set up to deal with how Chelsea are playing, and there is, dare I say it, no tackle intensity at all. There's no intensity. There's nothing to it, and it just doesn't look like they've got the belief in what the manager's asking them to do.
Andy?
Yeah, I'm really surprised, to be honest with you. I'm watching the game, and I haven't seen loads of West Ham. I've seen bits and pieces over the last few weeks, and I'm kind of watching this game, and they do look miles off. I think Rob is right. It doesn't look like there's any structure. There's no intensity in the play. Nobody wants to get close to anybody. I haven't seen one tackle in the game, and I'm really surprised. And, you know, as I said earlier, I do rate Lopetegui. You know, he's obviously got a fantastic CV, having kind of coached, you know, involved in games that we've played against his teams. You can tell that they're always well set up and well drilled. So I'm looking at this a little bit kind of bemused, really.
Let's go to Carrow Road. Watford are on level terms. Nathan?
They are, Mark. An equaliser very much against the run of play. Rocco Vatta hitting the post. Ken Semmer keeping the move alive. He crossed to the back post. And Ryan Andrews rolled it into the far corner for his second of the season. It's Norwich 1, Watford 1.
And I was just slightly hesitant there because I couldn't work out whether England had taken a wicket or not and whether the Aussies were going to review it. But they haven't, Eleanor.
No, exactly. England have and Australia haven't. And it's Mitch Marsh who's out. LBW to Jake Bethel, so big wicket for the young spinner. He looked at it quite hard, Mitch Marsh, and decided not worth reviewing that one. He'll be given out on the field. And Australia 151 for 5 in the 27th over.
When you talked about coming up against these teams, Andy, what were the challenges against playing against the Lopetegui team?
Tactically flexible, I found. They had different ways of kind of making a box in midfield. A little bit similar in some ways to the Villa setup, where you could get a fullback making the box, you could get a 10 making the box, or you could even get a 9 coming off a little bit deeper and making a box in midfield to create an extra man. And at times that became really, really difficult to deal with, so you had to hold your shape really well. part of the problem, I suppose, that they've got here is that we're not being able to see anything really from them in possession that suggests that that they're going to really hurt Chelsea and out of possession, like we've touched on quite a bit. They're not getting close to anybody. So I'm not seeing the bits that I have seen previously.
I would say, though, just it's not been overly impressive defensively, but I would say in the last 5-10 minutes, they've definitely been the better team. You know, Chelsea, bar the two chances, I've not seen that much from them, and Chelsea have been good this season.
I do think it's easy when you're 2-0 down, though. Like, you know, you know, when it's 0-0, that's when you need to go and really get on. You know, Chelsea have scored 2 goals. They're in the driving seat here. They're really, really comfortable. They're not really conceding loads of chances, so they'll probably just wait and pick them off and get another one.
Yeah.
Chesterfield have taken the lead in League Two. Dylan Markande has got that, and they lead Cheltenham by a goal to nil. When I may have put Rachel off slightly when she was talking about, I was trying to get a message to my producer about whether we should go to the horse racing next. I mimed what I thought was riding a horse, but it would put it this way. It wouldn't have been anywhere near the finishing line, wouldn't the horse that I was riding, the way I was riding that. Anyhow, it's Ayr's biggest flat meeting of the year, and it comes to a climax this afternoon with the Ayr Gold Cup. The race goes off at 3:35. Darren Owen will be calling them home, and it'll be a tough one to call, won't it? There's pace everywhere, obviously.
Oh, yes. Certainly, that is the case, Chappers. I mean, yesterday we had the Bronze Cup, and there was a cavalry charge of 24 runners. I was expecting the stand-side horses to dominate. That's where I thought the pace would come from. What happened? The first few home were all on the far side. These sort of races, big fields, they tend to split into two groups. Looking at today's race, a couple of leading lights, American Fair, Rohan, they're drawn low, which means they'll probably race on the far side if they do split into two camps. Room Service, that horse is drawn to the near side running rail. So it'll be very, very interesting what happens. Now, American Fair is the favourite, trained by Jim Goldie. He's also got Jordan Electrics going for him today. And Jim Goldie trains in Scotland. He'll be bidding to become the first Scottish-based trainer to win this race for 49 years. American Affair comes into the race in good nick as well. Won the Portland Handicap at Doncaster last week. And American Affair will bid to become the first horse since the champion sprinter Lock Song in 1992 to win the Portland and then a week later win the Ayr Gold Cup.
You've got Doonside Cup and the Silver Cup before the Gold Cup.
We have, yeah, the Silver Cup is basically for the next 25 horses on the list who didn't make the cut for the Ayr Gold Cup. That race includes the likes of Summer Gander, who actually won the big prize a couple of years ago, and a horse called Alpha Kalini, an improving three-year-old filly, has been in really good form, having won her last 5 races. She's the favourite for that. And the Doonside Cup, Enf Jar and Phantom Flight, they renew rivalry. They've already met at York this season. Phantom Flight finished in front of Enfjar, and Persica is another horse that may want to stay in that race.
Thank you, Darren. It's a busy day at Newbury as well, and we'll be across everything that goes on there. A couple more goals. Brighton have taken the lead in the Women's Super League at home to Everton. That's on the half hour. And Accrington in League Two lead Port Vale by a goal till. They're yet to win in any competition this season, or Accrington Stanley, but they have the lead this lunchtime. There was a VAR check going on at the London Stadium. John Southall?
There was. West Ham 0, Chelsea 2 still. It was for a penalty for West Ham. Somerville went down for a challenge from Fofana. They looked at it, didn't give it. Mark Albrighton, correct decision?
Yeah, I think it was in the end, yeah. It would have been quite harsh.